the question of did Viking find life on Mars is an important one. And from a science point of view, I would say it's unlikely. It's not a hypothesis that we should follow up on scientifically. But now if you put on another hat and say, well, what about human health and safety? What about sending astronauts there? Do they have to worry about infection? Well, that's a whole different level of certainty. We better be cautious.
So this isn't the case of the known unknowns. It's a case of the certain uncertainties.
That's right. This is a case of uncertainties and how you weigh them. And you weigh them differently if you're doing science versus if you're doing precautionary astronaut health and safety.
Chris McKay, it's always a pleasure to have you join us. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Chris McKay is a planetary scientist at the NASA Ames Research Center.
Thanks to the lively trio who helped produce the show, senior producer Gary Niederhoff, operations manager Barbara Vance, and intern Daniel Marino.
Thanks also to financial support from Rena Shulsky David and Sammy David, and to the William K. Bose Jr. Foundation. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, a nonprofit scientific and education organization whose scientists study the origin and nature of life, including whether there really is life beneath the dry sands of Mars. And a big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to the Big Picture Science episode, Frog's Pants. If you want to hear more Big Picture Science episodes, no need to theorize about how to find them. They exist in our archive at bigpicturescience.org.
And if you're a podcast listener but prefer listening to over-the-air radio because you think it beats the pants off podcasting, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know you like the show. Oh, and to reach us directly with your comments, throw in some faint praise, and then email it all to bigpicturescience@seti.org.
I'm thinking it's time that we had a little boy now. Anthea, add another pinch of cardamom to my blood pudding.
Yes, dear.
Meanwhile, I'll chop an extra 2 cords of wood. I want this boy to have character.
Hi, this is Willie Porter, and you are a smart listener for being supportive of this particular station, that, of course, being WHFR Dearborn.
The following program has been pre-recorded. Views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone, where local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle-Wright. Rebecca is the founder of the Institute for Exoconsciousness, an international initiative of the community of the exoconscious, a network of ET experiencers and their communities providing online education, training, and certification. Rebecca's signature is exploring what it means to be an exoconscious human, developing human ET consciousness through contact, communication, and collaboration with extraterrestrials. In 2008, Rebecca authored the book Exoconsciousness, Your 21st Century Mind. She teaches exoconsciousness at International Metaphysical University. Rebecca was a member of Dr. Edgar Mitchell's Quantric International Science team, researching zero-point energy, consciousness, and ET presence, the ET presence. Her graduate degrees include an MDIV in philosophical theology from Boston University's School of Theology and a PhD in parapsychic science from American Institute of Holistic Theology. Her undergraduate degree is from Otterbein University, if I'm saying that correctly, and she is certified as a hypnotherapist and coach for Southwest Institute for the Healing Arts. And recently, she contributed to the film Gods Among Us, The Science of Contact. She also participated in the Phoenix Light documentary. She's a frequent guest on radio, television, and conferences where she shares effective ways to acknowledge and integrate ET contact, transforming the experience into a positive, beneficial life. So, without further ado, welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Thank you, David. I look forward to sharing with you during this time and your audience. So thank you for having me.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. And please tell our listeners exactly what exoconsciousness is.
Exoconsciousness is a word that was literally given to me during an, I guess you would call it, an anomalous ET experience. I was a single parent living in just outside of Phoenix, Arizona, raising my children. I was actually part of ET Experiencer Group in that town that I lived in. Mm-hmm. Actually, the town that I moved to, Synchronicity would have it that, you know, that was one of the longest running ET experiencer groups in the nation in this little town, and I just happened to move there, but I guess there really are no mistakes in life.
I was going to say.
And so I was studying, I was learning from other people. I was, you know, for the first time in my adult life, because I've been ET experiencer since I was a child, I was having the opportunity to share my ET experience with other people who were also adults and had had ET experiences, many of them like me, for most of their life. And I was just in bed one morning, the alarm clock went off, and back when they used to have clock radios, remember, you could hit the snooze button and have like 5 minutes of snooze. So being a single parent, I needed that 5 minutes of snooze. So fell back on my head, back on my pillow, and literally the word exoconsciousness just came into my body, not just my mind. It really came into my whole body, and I knew at that point that it was a thread that had been woven throughout my ET contact and throughout all of my learning and research that I had undergone, as well as all the ET experiences that I had undergone. And so I began more of a formal research into how I could define this word, and I began to define it initially as the study, kind of like an academic study, of the extraterrestrial origins, dimensions, and abilities of our human consciousness, so that from the extraterrestrial origins, dimensions, and abilities, our human consciousness has received information and thereby is able to connect to extraterrestrials to, at this point today, in terms of building what we call the community of the exoconscious, which are literally ET experiencers, we've come to define it that exoconsciousness is an innate ability in all humans. Sometimes I even call it a birthright, that all humans have the innate ability to connect and communicate with extraterrestrials. So that's, in a nutshell, what exoconsciousness means.
Okay, so are we talking about universal consciousness?
we are talking about extraterrestrial contact as part of universal consciousness. Okay. I define consciousness not as only a brain function like you would have in mechanistic science or in artificial intelligence or computer science or, you know, Obama's brain initiative that he started. Bush also had one. I define consciousness more along the Rupert Sheldrake consciousness science, a quantum scientist that define it more as a field of consciousness in which we humans participate. I believe that consciousness, that we as humans participate in consciousness not just through our brain, but literally through our entire body, our nervous system, our organs, our skin, our heart, that this is a holistic, that consciousness is a holistic experience. It's not just what the brain is able to connect with and filter.
And or the spirit. Am I right?
Right.
So I think of universal consciousness as, you know, a loved one is in peril or even dies, and you're asleep and boom, a shock, you wake up and you know something's wrong, that type of thing. Or, you know, I was just thinking about Aunt Lily today, and she called 5 minutes later, you know, that type of thing. That's what I think of universal consciousness, is that, you know, twins have that a lot.
Right.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but that's my idea of universal consciousness. Where exoconsciousness would, if I'm reading you right, exoconsciousness would extend beyond just this earthly plane to really envelop the universe in that universal.
It's definitely a cosmic.
Right.
It's definitely a cosmic concept. I'd say it's more than a concept. It's a way of talking about how we are connected to beings, intelligent beings that are, you know, beyond our earth plane, and beyond our 3D earth plane.
Right. So we're connected to our loved ones, and sometimes you have that intuition, let's call it universal consciousness, and then you have ET, which extends beyond that. Do I have a grasp of this?
I think so.
Yeah.
Are you talking about our loved ones that have passed over,
no,
or our loved ones that are still in the earth plane?
Well, yes and no. Our loved ones that are still in the earth plane, you know, like the examples I gave, I thought of Aunt Lily, you know, and today, and she called 10 minutes later. That's could be, you know, the universal consciousness. But
yes,
if you're talking about connecting to extraterrestrials, then that extends beyond that, and we could call it the cosmic consciousness, correct?
That is correct.
I
think that it's my opinion that we are so, consciousness is such a difficult concept for us
right.
at this point.
Right.
Some of the researchers that I deal with, I mean, one man is come up with the fact that we are working with 40 different definitions of consciousness at this point.
Oh my!
So that's quite a few.
They would have to make it complicated, wouldn't they?
I guess it sounds like it. I actually think ET contact is really pretty simple. I think that a lot of people have, probably millions of people on the earth, are very comfortable with their extraterrestrial contact.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly been part of, you know, I'm living in Phoenix. I was living in Washington, D.C., and I just moved to Phoenix, Arizona, and certainly here you have a whole, you know, indigenous Native American population that
mm-hmm.
has been very comfortable with the cosmic origins and communicating with different beings.
Oh, yeah.
Just part of their culture. So I think, you know, when you look at it from that aspect of a worldview,
mm-hmm.
I think it's probably a predominant worldview, but just not here in the, you know, in the Western world as such, in the kind of.
Mm-hmm. Have you visited Sedona?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And how does Sedona compare with, say, Washington or any place else. I mean, there's probably no comparison. But I mean, is there really an energy in Sedona that seems to emanate?
Oh, absolutely. I work some with people who are intuitives and ley line readers of the earth, and mm-hmm. I think that the entire planet has very powerful vortices, and that we can go and visit, and we get attracted to at different times of our life. And mm-hmm. Certainly Sedona is one of the most vivid here in the Western. Mount Shasta also, mm-hmm. and yeah, absolutely. Washington, D.C. is a different kind of vortex, I would say. Living there for 6 years, when I was part of Edgar Mitchell's Quantrac team, it's a very different experience. I was doing different work, and I was, affiliating with people who had a very different worldview and mindset. And then Edgar passed away, and it was time for me to, pick back up. Because prior to going to work for Edgar, I had published my book, Exoconsciousness, Your 21st Century Mind. So I was really very deep into the whole ET experience, mm-hmm. and I went to work for him in D.C., and it became more of a government, political, scientific type of work that mm-hmm. I did, but yeah. always from the standpoint that, I am an experiencer, and I get information from multiple levels. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I don't know if your listeners know who Edgar Mitchell is. I mean, mm-hmm. a lot of young people I talk to have never heard of him.
They don't know.
But he was the sixth man to walk on the moon. He came back from the moon with what's called an overview experience of what it really means to live on the planet Earth. Mm-hmm. as a planet within space, and talked a lot about what our cosmic psychic intelligence and consciousness was about. He founded the IONS Institute out in California. Mm-hmm. And actually, I feel like I was asked to come and work with his team because I was an ET experiencer, and which says a lot about how he regarded that innate ability humans to be exoconscious.
Yeah, I had Edgar Mitchell on the show several years ago, and fortunately I did. And
then,
of course, he passed away, and I did I just felt like I had to play that interview again. And so I just did that recently, and so yeah, he's what a guy,
He's really quite remarkable. He and I went into WikiLeaks together after he passed away. Mm-hmm. I had been sending emails to John Podesta and asking about asking to set up a meeting for Edgar and myself, which Podesta's office was responding to. And
That's the ones that came out. And,
WikiLeaks, so.
I did an editorial about that in a MUFON newsletter. And it's to my way of thinking, correct me if I'm mistaken, but all those emails that were leaked were just suggesting to Podesta that, and Podesta was a great believer in ET mm-hmm. and UFOs, but all these emails are suggesting, we should have a congressional hearing on this. Well, I understand Congress has quite a bit on their plate right now, but and I probably won't be cleaned up anytime soon, but bottom line is, they were suggesting to Podesta that we delve into this a little deeper, that disclosure happen. And he was kind of, I guess you're right. But nothing earth-shattering, no smoking gun that I could see.
Oh, no. But Podesta did agree to meet with Edgar and myself.
Oh, yeah.
We initially sent the emails asking to meet with Podesta and Obama, but his office did. I mean, if you go back and read the whole trail of the emails. He did agree to meet with Edgar and me, so that was really quite a remarkable thing that happened.
It did happen.
Shortly after that, when Edgar was actually unable to come to the meeting because of his health, mm-hmm. at that point, that's when I withdrew from Quantrec at that point because kind of knew that this was where we were going, and I felt like I needed to get back to my roots in exoconsciousness. And then a couple other women picked up the trail and tried to arrange the meeting, but it never happened. So.
Okay, so Podesta and Dr. Mitchell never really had a face-to-face, is that right?
No.
Shame. What a shame.
But he did agree. Podesta, you know, to his credit, he did agree to the meeting.
Okay.
He agreed to have a meeting, but Edgar was, because of ill health, was unable to come to the meeting. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I had him on my show reminder list I sent out to interested parties that, you know, want to be reminded that the show is going to be on a certain time.
Oh, good.
And all of a sudden, I get this unsubscribe from him, and I said, oh, it's kind of hurt, you know? No explanation.
Maybe. It may have been.
Yeah.
I know his daughter was sort of...
taken over.
Yeah.
So that, you know, I wish he had explained, you know, he's ill and all that, but he wanted to...
I have to say, you know, David, I think that the whole illness, it happened very fast. I mean, it sort of really took me aback a bit how
what
quickly
was the illness?
That he... Yeah.
What was it, dementia or...
I think somewhat, and yeah. I just think that he was I think he had some diabetes issues, and he fell had a pretty serious fall. And...
Oh, nice. Well, as they say, he's in a better place, and I'm so.
Right.
So back to this exoconsciousness, you say it came to you. Was this before or after the term exopolitics was in vogue?
It was around the very same time, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It was around the same time of because I'm good friends with, you know, Michael Sala, Alfred Weber.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've been in this field for so many years, you're all just, you know, walking the same path together.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it was just right around the same era. And while, you know, of course, you know, I was willing to move to Washington, D.C., so, of course, you know, I've always had an interest in politics. I don't think you move there without having some kind of interest in politics. So I just, but really my whole feeling at that point was that while I thought ufology as the investigation of UFOs was important, while I thought that the political disclosure movement was important. For me, it was always going to be about consciousness.
Right.
And how we, that consciousness is really how we're going to find out. When we begin to understand human consciousness, then we will begin to understand how we are connected to the field of consciousness, which includes extraterrestrials.
Right.
And I would and telepathy and intuition and a whole myriad of psychic abilities.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say not only are that what I call an exoconscious human would then be, David, a person who has had an ET experience,
mm-hmm.
and that has, you know, taken that experience and kind of digested it, lived with it, and integrated it into their being, their body, mind, spirit, holistically. They've integrated it into their being,
mm-hmm.
and that they live with this conscious awareness as almost like a baseline, and that this is their worldview, that their worldview is inclusive of cosmic connections, as well as connections between other people who are like them, who have had these experiences.
Right. I need to take a moment just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. That's 89.3 FM on your radio. and, of course, WHFR.FM on your computer. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle-Wright. And she is the author of Exoconsciousness and, 21st Century. Fill that in for me. I don't have it written down in front of me.
Oh, Exoconsciousness, Your 21st Century Mind.
Right. Okay, and let's go back then to your childhood. You had experiences as your childhood. Are you willing to share that with our listeners?
Oh, absolutely. I'm one of, I think, many people that I have met that had whose ET experiences started in very early childhood. David, I've actually met people who have had crib ET visitations, who have a vivid memory of being in a baby crib and having ET visitations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really quite a remarkable phenomenon that that many of us have experienced. So my experiences started around 3. And it was a very, I would say, simple integration for me as a child. It was just part of my life. I remember being taken to, you know, what we call UFO ships. I don't even know if that's where I was, but I recall being taken there. I recall, you know, working with mentors, working with people that actually later in my life I work with as an adult today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, maybe we talk about spiritual contracts. Maybe I had spiritual contracts with them. Maybe I had ET contracts with them to bring in this information. I had quite a bit of contact as a child.
Have you ever been told by ET, or believe you've been told by ET, that you made this contract to work with them before coming into this particular physical body?
I was never told that.
A lot of experiencers have been told that.
Yes, but what my experience is more along the lines of that's just a knowing that eventually, I think because mine started so young,
mm-hmm.
I think oftentimes adult experiencers have that kind of more adult knowing.
Right.
For me, it was just something that unfolded gradually, that it just became so obvious that this was what was going on,
okay.
That I had a contract,
right.
Or
right.
I had agreed to do this work.
Right.
And as a child, I had no idea about that.
It wasn't verbalized to you or mentally given to you.
It was just part of who I was.
It's understood.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then again, I think that's because of my age. I think I was a child.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, you talk about mentors. You wouldn't identify a mentor as a 3-year-old, right?
No. I would not call them by that name at that age. But that doesn't mean that I was not aware that there was someone in my presence,
mm-hmm.
that I equated with adults in my life.
Okay. So, and
they were very different than the adults in my life.
Right. Oh, right. I guess. And they looked different, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And behaved differently, that there was a whole different reality there.
And as to looks, how did they look? Were they the small grays, the tall grays, the reptilians, what?
Actually, all of that.
All right.
I have experienced all of that.
Wow.
In my childhood, actually.
Hmm.
I've always been very aware of the multiplicity of races.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so everybody seems to think that the reptilians are the bad guys out there. Other people's say that it's the small grays that are the bad guys. Are there any bad guys? Who's the bad guys? Who's the good guys?
Well, it's interesting that you bring this up, because one of the things, we're creating this community of the exoconscious online, where we're networking ET experiencer groups. around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first things that we put together was kind of the goals and objectives of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first pieces of information that we brought together about ourselves was that we work with extraterrestrials, some who are not like us.
Okay.
And there is a feeling of, and once again, this community of exoconscious are people who are working on integrating their ET experience and maturing with it, and you know, trying to look at it in more of a holistic way. And so most of us are coming to see that extraterrestrial races are often going through developmental phases, not unlike we Earth people are going through, that there's a developmental phase within consciousness that we all proceed from, and we tend to judge and demonize different levels of consciousness as bad, when in fact they're just, you know, they're a level of learning that people actually progress through. And I would also say that I think for all of the information about reptilians that come out that they're the bad people, that there's just as much information in ancient literature that reptilians are really can really be seen as one of the protectors of Earth, of planet Earth, and that goes to the grays also. So I think we need to be really careful when we get caught up in kind of hyperbole, sensationalism,
labeling.
Yes,
labeling.
And I think that the ufology community, which includes exoconsciousness, that recently, like everyone else, we've been caught up in this onslaught of wanting to, you know, break the latest news, you know, have the latest story about the smoking gun, you know, this kind of this hyperbole news cycle. And really, our community of exoconsciousness has kind of separated from that, and felt as though that's really not where we're going to progress. We're really going to progress as a grassroots organization of people who, you know, want to gather together to learn from each other and to mature and integrate their experiences.
All right, all right.
And it's not about the nightly news or the headline in on Facebook.
Well, I think the news aspect of it is more or less this continuing desire to prove that UFOs are real, ET is visiting us, something's going on there, and you know, even. There's a group, and I'm not going to think of the name of it now. Ted Rowe leads this NICAP? NICAP. Okay.
NICAP. Uh-huh.
And they originally didn't want to be connected with MUFON and these wacky doodles that say that ET is visiting us and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, they understood there are some craft out there that we don't know what they are.
Yes.
So they're the ones that changed UFO to UAP.
Right.
Unidentified.
I don't think that's quite sticking, though.
No, not really. Unidentified aerial phenomenon.
Aerial phenomenon.
Yeah, and okay, you call it what you want to call it.
Right.
We're in the same boat here. We're still seeking the answers to the same questions.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ted Rowe has addressed the MUFON symposium twice since then.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, I don't know if they, I haven't been following that, but I don't know if he's kowtowed to it already or what.
I've read about that. And I think that eventually, I mean, when I hear in Phoenix MUFON is very open and embracing the whole aspect of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think slowly but surely MUFON is coming around to it, to, you know, to see that consciousness is really an aspect that we need to study. And I think that, you know, sounds like you've been in this field a long time. I mean,
yeah.
Of course, the entry point was always going to be nuts and bolts, material science,
yeah.
And
MUFON.
You know, going for government documents. So
yeah,
but I think we've kind of passed. I think that's always that aspect is always going to be with us, and MUFON does a beautiful job of that, of collecting data and looking at kind of like nuts and bolts. And I think that we're also ready for other avenues to open, like exoconsciousness.
Right.
I think people are ready for it right now.
Well, MUFON originally was interested only in the nuts and bolts crap
right.
that was in the sky. They didn't want to talk about any possible occupants. And
right.
God forbid that they talk about alien abduction, you know? And but slowly they came around to, you know what, if they're up there and those nuts and bolts craft are intelligently controlled, then there's got to be some intelligence inside them.
Some controller.
Wake up.
Right.
You know? So they have woken up to that since then. And now I believe they're coming around to the...
I think whoever, I always laugh because I always look at that word UFO, unidentified flying object. That was always the focus, you know, out there, up in space, unidentified flying object.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of flip that in exoconsciousness and say, you know, we humans and our consciousness is really what's unidentified.
Yeah.
And when we begin to identify the parts of ourselves that we, you know, haven't looked at yet,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe the cosmic or the extraterrestrial parts of ourselves that we haven't looked at yet, that's when we'll really begin to understand what this phenomenon is about, because it is a human phenomenon.
Yeah, and it's kind of like we know more about the moon, our moon, than we do about what's underneath the surface of our own oceans and our own waters.
Yeah.
That's why E.T. has a perfect place to hide in the Mariana Trench.
I actually think that a lot of the money that was poured into secret space programs was probably poured into underground installations here on the Earth.
Yeah. I wonder how many of those underground installations are for E.T. to work with us, you know?
Yeah, I don't have the answer to that. That's only a sense that I have of, you know, how we are now using the Earth and how E.T. has used the Earth.
Yeah. So what have you learned in all your short years, I will say, from childhood about E.T.'s agenda? Have you learned anything from it?
I think that actually what I've come to learn is that we humans are the E.T.s, that we are literally a race of extraterrestrials who are waking up to our identity as such.
Very good, very good.
That's probably the most important thing that I have learned. And when I say that we humans are the ETs, oftentimes people just, you know, roll their eyes and don't get it. But if you really kind of sit with saying that, it takes on a whole different meaning within your body and within your mind and your spirit.
Well, some say that we're all stardust, so would that make us all extraterrestrial?
Yeah.
Yeah. So panspermia, that's...
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm just taking that with the consciousness piece and moving that a step further,
right.
I would say.
Right, right.
That, you know, we weren't created by meteors, but that we were literally created by some kind of an agreement, an extraterrestrial type of agreement. And once we make peace with that, as opposed to being afraid of it,
right,
that we can, you know, begin as humans to move to, you know, I would say other levels of awareness, other levels of consciousness, other levels of dimensionality that we possess as humans.
The more we learn about physiology, biology, the more it scares people, really, because, you know, all these germs. We got to keep all these germs, bacteria, away from our bodies, keep them pure. Man, if you knew how much bacteria was going on inside, and when they find that out, they say, oh, my goodness. But that's what learning about biology is. That's what learning about us is.
Mm-hmm.
And you take that a step further and you go into consciousness. Does the consciousness live after physical death? I say yes. It has.
And interestingly enough, many ET experiencers had near-death experiences. I mean, there's a strong tie between the two phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of study with the NDEs, near-death experiences, that you know, they have this awareness now that they didn't have before, and some are even able to communicate with the spirits and what have you.
I'm writing a new book called The Exoconscious Human, where I discuss, it's called The Exoconscious Human, A Primer for Possible Futures, and I'm examining different future pathways that we could take as humans, as exoconscious humans, into our future, how we could live differently as exoconscious humans. And one of the issues that I grapple with in the book is artificial intelligence, because it is so connected to our brain and our nervous system that, you know, what is going to happen if we agree. We have a whole generation of young people who have been raised on cell phones and, you know, technology,
yeah.
Very savvy about technology. You know, what if that whole generation agrees that they will be chipped and that their mind will be, you know, hooked up to, you know, whatever computer there is? And, you know, what happens to the extraterrestrial experience if that happens? You know, how do we then have the conscious freedom to move out into the universe and connect with different species of ET if we're chipped and if our consciousness is harnessed?
Right.
So for me, that is probably, you know, one of the pivotal issues that we're dealing with today.
Right. I need to take one more break just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and that's 89.3 FM on your radio. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Dr. Rebecca Hardcastle Wright on exoconsciousness, or the consciousness of universal consciousness, cosmic consciousness, call it what you will. If you are just joining us, you have to go back and listen to us on the archives for the explanation of exoconsciousness. But it's a fascinating subject, just fascinating. So what I was going to ask you is, how do individuals become exoconscious? Which ties into your new book, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How would that be?
I think sometimes we become exoconscious by asking for an extraterrestrial experience. You know, we open our heart to that happening to us, to connecting deeper, you know, within ourselves, because it's not, exoconsciousness really doesn't come from the outside. Mm-hmm. It comes from the inside.
This sounds... What you're saying sounds more like a religious experience, you know, open your heart to Jesus or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I think anytime you talk about anomalous phenomenon and consciousness, you know, back in the age of reason or the age of enlightenment, when science took over all learning, you know, geography and biology and every other type of learning, interestingly enough, the only piece of learning that they didn't take over was consciousness. And they actually left consciousness with the church. And for probably, you know, well over 400 years, if not 1,000 years, the church hasn't done anything with it. They just
dumped it
into that concept and pretty much done nothing with it, except, I would say, in kind of in this sort of under the radar work that's done in terms of mysticism. I don't know if you've heard of the psychologist Henry James, varieties of religious experience.
Yes,
he
yes, yes.
went into mysticism and, you know, what happens when we have these anomalous experiences, mm-hmm. because some religious experiences are anomalous. I mean, that's
well,
their
yeah.
psychology. And so I think because of that, the only way we know to talk about consciousness or for me to say something like we go within with our heart is by relating it back to religion.
Right.
Because that's the only framework we have to even talk about it.
That's right. That's right. So science deals mostly with the physical and leaves consciousness, as you say, dumped it in religion's lap and there it lies.
Right. Until today, you know, back, you know, probably 20 years ago when there first started to be departments of consciousness at universities. I mean, it wasn't even a topic at an academic on the academic roster until maybe 20 years ago. And now, you know, it's grown. But, you know, and interestingly enough, when it did become a topic on an academic roster, it immediately became, you know, hostage to, well, it's all the brain, you know, it's all about brain research.
Yeah.
And nothing about, you know, dealing with consciousness in terms of the field or the quantum level.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're a very dualistic Western civilization.
Yeah.
And that's how we've chosen to deal with it.
But the thing is, I believe, and it's been said, and I believe it's true, that science, religion, exopolitics, exoconsciousness, the paranormal, all of these things can coexist if they just look at each other and get together and say, what do we have in common, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And I have to say that among, you know, I'm actually, because of my work with Edgar, I, you know, I'm privileged to be in a lot of email groups and, you know, have a lot of relationships and friendships that I've built with consciousness scientists and people in different neurology and that sort of thing. So I think there is an openness, and there's certainly an openness now to the kind of the parapsychology of ET experience that I think that that's beginning to, you know, open up in new ways.
Mm-hmm.
And but, you know, people are, it's for Western civilization, we're always going to want to analyze it. We're always going to want to know what the nuts and bolts are, kind of like ufology and UFOs.
Certainly.
That's where we always start.
So I think that's the problem with mainstream science is that, we want to know the nuts and bolts of it. And I understand that and appreciate it. But it's just so hard to put our fingers on that which is not nuts and bolts, you know?
Right. When you start talking, as we do in exoconsciousness, we talk about the ET experience as an initiatory experience where you're kind of initiated with this experience of this extraterrestrial being that lies outside of your worldview.
Right.
And then you go through kind of an initiation experience where your bubble bursts and, you know, what you thought was real is no longer real. And then we also talk about the transformative, the spiritually transformative aspects of exoconsciousness that we don't let go of the knowledge that we had before. But we reorganize it into a new worldview where there is a transformative quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and those, I mean, who's dealt with that in the past? You know, it's primarily been via religion.
Right.
You know, science really has not looked at initiation or transformation, except maybe, you know, sociologists or whatever.
Right.
And even then, it's been more of, you know, what were the practices, you know, what were the nuts and bolts of it? It hasn't been about asking what was the meaning of this experience.
Right. And then the religious person will say this exoconscious, nothing to this exoconsciousness and spirit communication and that type of thing that can't be that. And yet they believe in the power of prayer. Well, what is the power of prayer? What is that? That's exoconsciousness.
Right. I think the whole, you know, the church was kind of, you know, when the New Age was ushered in back in the 60s and the 70s, I think, you know, because I come out of religious, out of a religious orientation. I mean, I went to seminary. So I think that the church really had to grapple with what cultural versus religious spirituality meant and
right.
How they were going to, you know, have a dialogue. I don't really think that dialogue ever happened at any meaningful level, and I think that's very unfortunate. So, I mean, I continue to reach out to religious leaders and to people in academics who study religion and bring forth the field of exoconsciousness and ask them to, you know, respond and come into a dialogue with me about it. Mm. And I've had very little luck.
Yeah. Well, what was I going to say on that subject? Well, I was going to ask you, when you lived in Washington, okay, were you able to reach out to any of the politicians, or were they able to, you know, is there any common ground between, I don't know how much you did with politicians, but was there any meetings of the mind there? As far as ET's concerned?
I know a lot of people in D.C. I mean, you know, I networked with a lot of people and just a lot of different levels, you know, government, military, intelligence, you know, people that work for, you know, the mainline newspapers there. And, you know, I was quite active with friendships and that sort of thing and did meet a lot of people in my efforts for Edgar. I found very little overall interest.
Really?
Like you say, you know, politicians have so much on their plate.
Mm-hmm.
I think that most politicians, you know, there's a wild card like a Dennis Kucinich or someone like that you know, would be, you know, willing to talk about it or a, you know, John Podesta. But by and large, there was very, very little. They just weren't interested. It just was not on their radar.
Or Jimmy.
D.C. is a very, you know, that you have a very narrow mindset when you move.
Oh,
there.
Yeah.
You know, there's things to accomplish and, you know, you keep your mind on those things. And I did have a very interesting evening that I had at a dinner party a man that was high up in intelligence, and at one point it's a long story, I won't go into it because we don't have much time left, but the gist of the matter of fact was I said to him that I felt that that the intelligence organizations in the United States were controlling the information about extraterrestrial presence, and that the intelligence organizations would decide when we have contact. And he said, "You're right about that."
Really? So, how high up was he?
He's very.
You're not
the
you're
top,
not,
but
you're not going to tell our listeners who this was, are you?
He was high up enough in one of the major.
Don't
you know?
Don't make me come to Phoenix.
So I mean that really isn't like newsworthy. I think a lot of us that have been in ufology for years, we already knew the answer to that question.
Oh, I mean, yeah,
earth shattering.
I often say on this show, you know, with all these high ranking officials coming forward, would the president of the United States, sitting president, make making a proclamation of such, you know, disclosure? Would it make any difference? Would that be any more official?
David, I've come to the realization after living in D.C. and after the work I did that the primary emphasis in Washington, D.C., whether it's, military contractors or lobbyists or universities connected to the government or government grants or military DARPA, I mean, most of these groups are really more interested in weaponizing whatever information is brought forth.
I know. Ain't it sad?
I mean, that's just the bottom line. That's where their mind is. Mm-hmm. They are more interested in monetizing and weaponizing than they are in, what it really means to be a human, what this ET presence is all about. It's kind of like, how can we control it? How can we get a hold of it? How can we weaponize it, Now we have a new, talks of a establishment of a new space army.
Yeah.
This is nothing new. This is just, what we've come to. And so I really feel that exopolitics, as well-meaning as a politician may be when they come to, the seat of power in Washington, D.C., chances are, they're going to get in line. You don't stay in D.C. unless you get in line.
That's it. That's it. I've often said
And so
said
this
it.
Is really, I think it's more important at this point, when we look at artificial intelligence or we look at, the reality of the corporate government military intelligence complex, that it's more important that we as ET experiencers spend our time in as a grassroots phenomenon, learning from each other about what this ET presence means.
Right. And I remembered what it was I was going to say when we were talking about the religious establishments and how they're handling ET or not handling ET. At least the Catholic Church has come around and they're not making a big deal of it, but they say, yeah, they're out there, they're visiting us, and they're God's children. So let's just leave it at that. And they want to be ahead of the curve because when disclosure finally comes around, and I've often said it on this show before, it will come around when ET decides it's going to come around.
Right.
And when it does come around, the Catholic Church will be able to look back, say, "Yeah, remember I told you? I told you they exist."
And I also think the Catholic Church is very, monetarily and in terms of a sovereignty. They're very much in control and power also. I mean, that's their...
Certainly. And
that's your modus operandi.
With the energy, zero-point energy, they don't want us to have that. They can't sell us that.
Right.
They can sell us coal.
I spent 6 years trying to, plow that field.
Yeah.
It's very... And I think a lot of, now we've kind of come into the, battery-powered cars, the mm-hmm. salvation, when, a lot of that research looks like it's almost more damaging to the earth to, do this mining to create these, massive car batteries.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact that you have to plug them in every night.
I've often wondered how that works.
Yeah.
Can I drive my car into your living room so I can charge this thing?
So, I don't know. I mean, how here in Phoenix, we have, covered parking, covered up with solar panels. It's a huge thing out here. But, mm-hmm. then again, we have, sunshine most days of the year. It's not like living in Washington, D.C. I don't know what's going to come of the energy situation. I've been following a man named Peter Wood who did a series on technocracy, and I learned a lot from him about how energy and the economy has been sort of the roadmap that's been laid out with that
mm-hmm.
from back in the 20s and 30s, actually.
Hmm.
So I think that whether it's zero point energy or whether it's solar or whether it's battery or hydrogen, that there has been since the 20s and 30s an economic roadmap laid out to establish an energy-based economy.
Ah,
which would be very different than a supply and demand human-based economy.
Right.
Energy-based economy would be run on metrics, would be run on kind of algorithms.
Yeah.
It would not be run on, it would be, you know, how much energy take to create this, therefore that's how much you pay.
We probably,
so it's not really going to be a human oriented economy at that point.
We probably won't see that day. But we're running out of time, unfortunately. Where can our listeners go to find out more about your work?
Two websites. Exoconsciousness.com is my personal website. If they want to get a hold of me, they can email me there, or I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn and all the social media across Twitter. And then I'm also, our community of exoconsciousness is just exoconsciousness.org, and we're building a map of ET experiences across the world, and we'd love to hear from you.
Sounds great. And I appreciate you being on the show with us today, and I hope we can do this again sometime.
That'd be fun, David. Thank you.
It was fun today.
Okay.
And thank you much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And this show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. And We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. So please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. So until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
Yo, what up, though? This is Jay Retch, and you're tuned in to WHFR Dearborn.
Yo, guys and dolls. You are at the malt shop with Daddy G here in WHFR, and we are going back to the 50s and the 60s.